Thank you for downloading this podcast from policyreview.tv.
Right. Well, thank you very much, and I'm conscious of the time. I'm also conscious I'm the last speaker, and I was sitting there listening to what's been discussed. I wasn't sure whether to be depressed or to be quite happy, because throughout today, either people have been stealing my thunder, or actually, I've been saying my presentation is actually going to pull together various themes that you've already heard. So, you know, maybe it's great minds or maybe it's fools. But what I have really enjoyed today is listening to different speakers and listening to some of the phrases they've used. So I'm going to take away one phrase and I'm going to steal it and use it again. When one of our previous speakers was talking about institutions being fiercely different. And I think that that was much better than competitive and describes things. But, okay. Right, so one of the things that we've picked up everywhere is that we're all expecting tomorrow to be different to yesterday. And if we're expecting tomorrow to be different, then there are lots of implications about culture, about people, about what we do and how we do it. So what I'm going to be doing today is actually talking about what's worked and what hasn't worked. But I thought I'd sort of explain who I am, coming from a company with the odd name of HE Shared Services. And as this is the HE Shared Services Forum, thank you very much for coming to my forum. But basically, it's a virtual network of many former IT directors, some librarians, finance directors, people who've been in the sector. And now some are working as consultants, some are retired and come back and will work if there's an interesting project. But we sort of position ourselves right on the fence in between the HE world and the commercial world. Because sometimes we'll go and dabble and do work inside a university. But actually, if we want to move forward, many of the vendors who want to come into HE don't understand HE. They haven't worked in the sector. They don't know the language. They don't know who to talk to. And many of them come in, have a look around, fail to make a sale, and then leave. And actually, that's bad for them, and it's very bad for us. So we sort of sit on the fence and try to help them in and sometimes act as a babelfish. So what I'm going to be doing is picking on a few of the reasons why projects have worked in the shared services area and why they haven't. And there's a reference at the bottom to a paper that was funded by JISC that a group of us wrote about a year or so ago that has well over 100 completely separate examples of shared services or cloud that have actually worked sort of in HE globally. And the report reflects on some of the reasons and some of the difficulties that we find in, both in the UK, but also when we look at other countries. Okay, so you might find, if you ever want to reference something, you might find some useful materials in there. Okay, so if I come back to look at the HE environment or the UK HE environment, many of these points have been made already, but we've got to come back to a few of the basics. All of our members are independent. They're all autonomous, and and they often have quite different goals. This is the fiercely different. And I've heard several speakers say people outside think that we're very inefficient. Well, actually, if you looked at us as a group, we are very inefficient. With 166 institutions, we run 166 payrolls and 166 of everything, unless we do 332 when we double up. But I could say the same thing about the manufacturing industries and all sorts of other things where you've got people in the same sort of area but fiercely independent, doing things. So, sometimes perceptions from outside need to be viewed rather carefully. But although we're fiercely competitive, we're also very, very willing to talk, to socialise, to work together as groups. And I've spent more than 20 years in manufacturing. And I never had a problem in IT in any of the companies I ever worked with in IT, at least none that I'd ever admit to anybody outside. We just didn't talk and own up. And so it's actually quite different what we can get away with and what we can do in this sector that you just don't see in many others. We are conservative, and the whole nature of universities is that we're very resistant to change unless we can actually see that change is to the benefit of my institution and people inside my university. Now, they will move if they have to move, but we've just got to recognise that is the nature of much of the culture of our universities. Other things that people from outside, when they look at us, and shared services has come, we've had lots of people advocating we ought to move in shared services. In almost every other sector, the basic unit of doing business is a purchase order or a sales order or an invoice or a goods receive note. But our units of business are a lecture or they're actually a piece of homework. So quite often, some of the things that people talk about, you actually say, well, most of our work in a university is actually not quite the same as you'll see elsewhere. I was director at Newcastle University, and I reckoned that less than 5% of our data was actually administrative data. You know, there was so much. And so you start looking around and you see quite a few differences. There's also this discussion about are we public sector, are we not? And actually, we're not public sector. But you often get vendors coming along and say, I'm from public sector. And they just misunderstand. We're not public sector. We're also not commercial sector, totally. And we actually take bits of both behaviours. So when we come to procurement, we actually behave as if we are public sector. And it's just different, and we've just got to recognise the difference. The other thing that people often don't realise in UK universities is that our governance and the way we work in the UK university sector is very different to what you see in other countries. Now, it's quite normal if you go to a country, let's say the US, you go to a state, and you'll find many of the universities are state-run. So if you go to the State University of New York, there are 63 campuses, 465,000 students, and one set of admin. If you go to Pennsylvania, 13 universities, one data centre running SAP for their admin. Now, if you go to many other European countries, because of their history and what they've done and how they've got to where they are, they have different solutions. So it's useful to talk and look elsewhere, but some things you see in other countries in HE can be applied here and others can't. So as you look forward, you've just got to be aware of where we've come from and how we operate. Some of the things that have come out today are other statements are quite often in a multinational or in parts of government, you get a top-down directed policy driven. The man at the top says you are going to do this in your subsidiaries, and because he's got the power and is able to dictate how things should, that all cascades down. You try doing that in HE, and you find it rather difficult. There's 1,000 reasons why we can't do that. And we've just got to recognise the things that work in some sectors don't really work very easily in ours because of our governance. And so the solutions and the methods that are adopted else in other industries or other sectors need to be adapted. Okay. Now, this often means with the big IT vendors that they go into the chief exec of a corporation, or they go in and they make a sale, and then it cascades down. Well, in HE, when we're obviously independent, you knock on door number one and you make a sale, and then you start all over again at door number two and all over again at door number three. And what that means is that we've got a very high cost of sale for companies or commercial companies coming into the sector. And as a result, you don't actually see many of the big vendors that you would see in other industry sectors. So if you went to public sector, you'll come across Fujitsu and you'll come across, Siemens and CSC and Logica and Capgemini and all these other names. But they don't have much of a footprint inside HE. And quite a lot of it is because they've all come in at different stages. They've all made one or two sales, but they haven't been able to make successive sales. And so they've often retreated. And so the vendors that we actually see are the vendors who've grown up with us and are used to our ways of working. And they've made a reasonably good living, but it means that they've learned that we're very slow on making decisions and they have to commit to being with us for the long term. So the get-rich-quick merchants who think they can come in, sell you something, make it, you know, and it'll be in that quarter's turnover, sort of don't do very well. The other thing is, when people say we're very inefficient, is that if you look at many universities, this low-hanging fruit, we've actually done quite a lot internally as separate universities to become more efficient over the years. We've had to do it ourselves, because very few other people will come in and help us. Where we've done it, the vendors we have used have often been the software vendors, because they actually provide some of the consultancy and some advice. But we've done it ourselves. But what does work very, very well in our sector is things that are bottom-up, voluntary, and issue-driven. When there is an issue and three or four universities get together, they often come up with something, and if it's any good, then University 5, 6, and 7 join. Okay, and if it's really good, then you get a few more universities join. Now, it does take time, but it means that each iteration, it's actually the service is getting often better. But that bottom-up is quite different to what you see, you know, sort of in other sectors, where quite often they'll do some bottom-up, but they also have the top-down approach. So the result of the study that I was doing about over a year ago was we looked at hundreds of shared services, and there are literally hundreds of these things, but almost everything. When you look at it, you start saying almost everything has come bottom-up in our sector. And it's really quite, often vendors just don't realise that every role we have in our institutions has a national body. Okay, now, you know, so you've got UUK, BUFDG, AHUA, AUA, USISA, AUD, the list goes on and on and on. And then you've got mission groups. And actually, you've got all of these opportunities for people, and they're active. They actually discuss, and they will share, and they'll talk to one another. And quite often they'll spawn a service, you know, if they find that there is a common issue. So but many of the services we often think are top-down started bottom-up. So if you look at UCA, or UCAS as it now is, you know, that was a group of universities got together in 1959, and by 1961 they had a service that I think had about 12 universities in, something like that. But they got together and said, we've all got this issue. If you look at Janet started off as, I think it was 7 research-intensive universities linked together, and, you know, as the JNT network. And then, if it's any good, other people wanted to join. And you get this snowball rolling down a hill. When it gets to a certain stage, it almost gets taken and used sector-wide and then starts being top-down. But many of these things start like that. You know, I've put up UMAL as just an example of something that's come from the finance directors, that they were often finding that the commercial companies weren't providing quite the service that they wanted, so they bandy together to say, well, why don't we act as, I'm not sure whether the word insurance or mutual or whatever, they'd say, hey, the market doesn't provide what we really need for insuring research projects or things like that, so why don't we get together and do it ourselves? But Sconnel or libraries, well, we've heard one example with UKRR, but there are literally hundreds of examples, you know, that from the librarians, that they are naturally collaborative, collusive, sharing people who, and so there are, you know, you get loads of things. UK research, well, we have lots of shared resources, you know, so rather than build a whacking great big data centre to do grid computing or whatever, the national grid is using lots of resources scattered around. You've got your particle physics, people pulling together and actually getting a better bang per buck by collaborating. There are, again, dozens and dozens of these things. Procurement, I don't know when the procurement consortia started, but it was a very long 70s, right? So we'd got many of the benefits a long time ago. And so when you see, you know, sort of the health service or many others, you know, sort of coming and doing things, well, we'd actually got, it's not saying we're particularly brilliant, but we'd had some of these initiatives quite a long time ago. Okay, so, and there's lots and lots more, you know, sort of, you know, the energy consortium. And then you get scatterings of things like, people have mentioned jobs.ac.uk, London Careers, ULCC, you know, the Norman Out of Hours help desk was set up, I think that was about 2007, something like that. You know, the five universities in the Northeast, I was at one of them, sort of said, we've got this issue. We put some money in, and JISC and, Hefke put some money in, and we started a service. Within 3 months, all five universities were up and running with an out-of-hour service. I think it's now 38 universities now sort of dial in automatically, and it's incredibly cheap. I think it's just over £20,000 a year, and you've got an out-of-hour service that covers your entire university. So there's loads of these things, but a few have started top-down, and so if you get some of these, call JISC is, you know, has developed many services, and you could say they're top slice funding, and they've actually developed a load of services. So you could say they're top down because of where their money was and it was being spent on behalf of the sector. HESA and has provided money, but again, that's mandated. You have no choice if you want to get some funding, and so it's being driven in. And student loan company, you find a few. But actually, the bulk of the shared services have come bottom-up. Now I'm going to talk about what hasn't worked, okay, and just some examples. And I can see that Mr. Butcher is going to react to the first one. Whenever you mention an initiative from the early 90s called the Mac Initiative, lots of people go into fetal balls. Okay, and some people say, no, although they said it was a failure, it was actually quite good. But whatever was happening, there was a good idea, produced some good work, but actually it just didn't end up taking off. And so perhaps it was a top-down, maybe it was a timing. But you have other projects like the e-university. You have in Swindon, there's the Research Councils have built a shared service centre. And you start saying, well, OK, each of these projects have run into all sorts of political and cultural and many other issues. And again, they're often, it's these big, grandiose projects run into all sorts of difficulties in our culture. Many other projects that you will find in other countries, you would think, oh, why don't they work here? And some of those will be, it's quite common in other countries to go and see things like a national computing environment, or you're putting money into one big pot. You'll find in France an organisation sort of similar to USISA would have a software company to design and build the ERP or the administrative systems for the sector. Well, we haven't done that. We actually buy stuff from commercial companies. You find with outsourcing has taken off, or external hosting has taken off on some things, maybe payroll are hosted, but it hasn't taken off in a big way where you would outsource large numbers of processes. But this has often happened in other countries. I was talking to Steve earlier about an example in Ireland, which is called AnCame, where there are 13 institutes of technology. For the last 10 or 11 years, all of those institutions have been running, apart from one, have been running from a single data centre, running the same version of software, and it's been implemented as a one-size-fits-nobody, top-down. But it was driven in, okay, that has happened. You can find these things happening in lots of other countries. You won't find it happening in the UK, again, because of our setup. Some of the things that I think we're seeing are actually shared services, if you call them shared services or outsourcing, that are actually moving really quickly, Tim was talking earlier about email, with 57%, he claimed, of universities. I think it's probably higher than that. Outsourcing, commodities, storage and whatever, with either Google Mail or Microsoft Mail. We're also seeing Moodle and other services often being outsourced, and that's going to continue growing. And we're starting to see people are going beyond email into more collaborative tools using Google Apps, Office 365. And these are sort of saying, well, most of the social networking tools that you can get, the Facebooks, eBays or whatever, you can actually bring many of those types of things inside the house using Google Apps or Office 365. And those are starting to take off very quickly. Only a few people using SharePoint 365 or Lync 365 in their students, but that's starting to change. But they're still being implemented, and you'll find quite a number of these things are starting to happen. Okay, so if your university is still running these things in-house, then apart from paying a lot of cost doing it, you actually will see your competitors putting a country mile between them and you by rapidly moving down, putting in these new technologies. Some of the things that are also happening is that because of the financial pressures, people are often coming back to their core business activities, and they're looking very much at both benchmarking, but starting to talk about what I find more useful than benchmarking is bench sharing. If it costs me £100 to register a student, but you can do it for £50, I'd like to know how you do it, because you've probably simplified the process or you've taken something out, and I actually don't want... It's no good to me knowing you're cheaper. I want to know how you've done it. And actually understanding and getting into bench sharing is actually going to become far more useful in the next few years. We're also seeing these huge technological changes that are happening, and your students are bringing in far more mobile devices. The bandwidth we're getting in our networks is absolutely huge. Cloud or the big hot topics in the US is student analytics, which is almost like your Tesco card, where they're monitoring every aspect of your behaviour. Well, this is doing the same thing with students and sort of saying, when did you last borrow a library book? When did you go to a lecture? When did you do this? Are your scores going up or down? And gathering all of that information to try to predict outcomes. Gaming technologies are coming in, right into the classroom to actually say, how do we teach people? Well, you learn an awful lot more if you go into, Second Life or World of Warcraft or use those types of technologies. And they're coming in very quickly. But we're seeing the things that I'm particularly interested in seeing as enabling the institutions that I work in move ahead. As we have more and more bandwidth going into universities through the Janet network, it actually gives us far more confidence to be able to put our workload outside. If we haven't got that bandwidth, we daren't do it because one misplaced JCB strike and we're off the air. But the brokerages that are being set up, and Janet are attempting to run a brokerage to do some services. ULCC are actually brokering and providing services. EduServe have been doing it with the Chest and some software. Just Nexus are providing these services. They're looking at developing connectors and actually sort of allowing you to connect one thing to another easily. What I'm looking for, and I see when people talk about cost-sharing groups, I would actually like a brokerage to share resources between universities. If I put my hat on at a university, I'm working at the University for the Creative Arts at the moment, we've just sold our site that has our data centre, which might be a bit short-sighted in one sense, but it means we have to move. We don't have a big data centre, but we would like to be able to use another data centre, maybe in another institution. So having the ability to broker and share services between universities would be really quite useful. Other thing is the outsourcers or these external companies, and this is some work that some of my researchers have been doing, is that because they don't understand HE, they often come along with a solution that they've got from somewhere else and wonder why we're not interested. And quite a lot of what they're starting to do is to say, how can they take their portfolio of services and serve it up in a way that actually will fit within both the appetite and also the culture of different universities. So they're starting to move away from the one size fits nobody, but actually say, well, okay, you're really interested in this type of service, might be procurement. You want to lead, you've got a problem with HR. You've got a problem with IT. And how do they build the services to actually fit at each institution? Very early days, but they're starting to want to come to the table. So I see some of those things happening. Some examples, a useful set of models for talking about shared services are to say there's at least five or six different types of models. There are shared services if you are next door to another university. You could share security, you could share catering, you could share, you know, it's the intensely local. You've then got regional, where you've got universities in the same area, you could share training. You know, sort of we're doing it in the Northeast. We all need our IT staff to understand Visio, Prince2, ITIL, all of those types of things. You often find birds of a feather, you know, the agricultural or the medical or universities teaching the same thing. Oh, well, why don't we share these things? In each of these cases, you can find services that are pertinent just to those types of institutions. We're seeing non-geographic services like a payroll. It doesn't really matter who you are or where you are, whatever part of the country. You could use those. There are shared services that would fit that. Then you have the cross-sector, which is what we've been hearing about in Plymouth, where next door to us is the NHS or is the local authority or our commercial companies. Now, there are opportunities for sharing different types of services between those. And then you have commercially transparent services where it's blindingly obvious there's an opportunity here to go and do things differently. And two or three universities will come together and say, well, you're doing that at the same time as me. Well, why don't we both go and negotiate and get a better deal? In each of those, you will find examples of what people have been doing. There's a group called Intellect, who are an association of all the IT companies. And I went to one of their meetings once, and that it was quite interesting. There was a letter from John Suffolk, who's a government CIO, and he wrote to them saying, could you please tell me why certain shared services have been a success and why some of them haven't? And I sat around with these very big consultancies, and you suddenly saw the slanty shoulders. And none of them could answer the question. And they said, oh, but didn't you have a great success in NP Fit or the National Health Service? No, but we did do that. And didn't you do a good job of the DVLA? And after a discussion, they said, the only time they've had great successes, usually there has been a client who has actually taken the lead. Instead of the consultants putting it in, somebody in the university, the local authority or whatever said, this is my project and I'm nailing my reputation to the mast on this. That person is respected in the organisation, and that you can gather around that particular person. It then requires the active support of all of the different groups around the university. I drove a postgraduate recruitment system into Newcastle a few years ago, but I only did the IT bit. The reason it worked was that we had an academic who then went on, Colin Reardon, went on to become Vice-Chancellor of Essex and then Cardiff. He absolutely nailed his colours to the mast and said, this is what we need. I'm an academic. I will tell you what. You know. And so he associated himself totally. Lots of problems just vanished. I would have gone along with my Gantt charts and risk registers and goodness knows what, would have got nowhere slowly. But it's this, the support of everybody is required, and we need quick wins. You know, we actually have to go fast. But all of these things, and this is what I've heard from every speaker so far today, is this isn't about technology or actually even about processes. Every single time, successes are built around people. And that's what, you know, I think that's the characteristic of almost everything we've seen. So that's a quick skate through some of the things that I've seen, which I hope pull together many of the themes that people have brought forward today. So one of the questions, and this is what I think we were wanting to do, was to throw this back at you to say, you've heard about lots of services. I'm particularly interested in the cost-sharing groups, and because that seems to open up a new avenue. Where do you think we will find success? What sort of shared services would you like to see, or do you think would work? Does anybody want to share anything? It was...
Sorry, hello, I'm Dave Brennan from the University of the West of England in Bristol. I'm kind of new to this shared services forum, as it were, and so it's been a very interesting conference. But it seems to me that there are certain things, like perhaps careers, student services, library services, IT, that effectively can be shared across almost UK-wide universities. Maybe library services could be put into that as well. Then on the other hand, obviously we as a local university in Bristol work with our other local universities, but also very closely with our local enterprise partnership, etc. And obviously in doing that, we support them, but also are able to then improve our local economy, which is to the advantage of ourselves, employability, etc., etc. So I think there I've learned, it's a very interesting from all the debate we've had today, that there are numerous different, it's like a grid of engagement, and there are various three-dimensional ways of looking at it, depending upon whether you're looking at a local or a national kind of solution, and depending upon which challenge you're looking at. And so I don't have any answers, but I've got a lot of questions to go away with, which is great.
I think that what I'd say to that is very much you would only want to get into a shared service if it was something that was going to benefit you. And I think you'd ought to look at what's a burning issue and, hang on, do I have to solve that myself, or do other people have that as a burning issue? And would they work with me?
Slightly tangential, but I'm Martin Myhill from the University of Exeter. It's a strange conference, really, in a sense. We've talked about higher education, not heard much about academics. Are academics customers or participants, and does it matter?
Does anybody want to answer that?
The best deflection I've heard.
They're stakeholders.
Right.
They've got an interest in making shared services work as much as we have. And in answer to your other question you posed, I'm Barry Higgins, University of Birmingham, sorry. I would say that if you can make what we've got existing better and publicise that, as Chris from UUK was saying, with some real metrics, then that's what kind of excites senior management, and that then demonstrates what can be achieved by shared services outsourcing, and there just isn't enough publicity and data out there.
Right. So are you volunteering to, do we bare our souls, or do we want some organisation like HESTA to go and collect even more things? I'm not quite sure how it would work, but it's important to actually try to improve our processes. Who's better than me at this? Because I'd like to go and see how they do it so that I can steal with pride.
Agreed. So isn't that the point? If you've got some metrics where you can see people are better than you at doing this, then you'll migrate towards them, find out what they're doing right, and then if you're any good at it, you'll do it better.
Okay. Well, I agree. Maybe that's what the role-based organisations might actually do. Who is the best at finance? Who's the best at HR? Whatever that means, so that we could go and learn.
I mean, that does in some respects go back to the point that was raised earlier, which is the tension between wanting to find out what your sort of what other institutions are either similar to you or that you benchmark yourself against, against an inherent competition. It's the same for staff. Actually, academics are also in many respects having to be competitive against one another, not just through research through research excellence framework, but also through through the recruitment of students and through various different things. And you talked about the opportunity to bench share, as it were. How were you able to, facilitate the sharing of that data willingly?
Well, I think Peter can probably explain a lot more about that.
Peter Tinson, USISA. USISA, along with many of the other professional bodies, collects statistics on a particular service. Obviously, our area is IT. Bizarrely, our sort of statistics questions were about 30-odd. When we added another 70 questions, response rate went up. Because what we were doing was encouraging people to share that information and go and talk to the people where there were, you know, appeared to be discrepancies. And we found that that has actually encouraged that sort of discussion. I'm sure the other professional bodies do, you know, pretty much the same.
I am conscious of time, but on that note, I mean, if anyone wants a final sort of word or comment or question, then now's the chance before going while gavel's gone. So again, if you wouldn't mind just giving a round of applause for Paul for his presentation.
Thank you.
You were right in saying there's the final plenary presentation, but. There are two seminars that will run in parallel to one another, and my proposal is that simply there's a sort of a 5-10 minute at most turnaround where people can, before everything's falling around my ears, to kind of pop to the toilet, grab a drink or something, the session in here is with graduate prospects, so delivering value through shared services, benefiting your HEI through shared degree verification. So if you wanted to attend that'll be in here. And then in a room outside, one on finance and looking at shared services around internal audit, which is in the room outside. So they'll start in sort of 5 or at most 10 minutes. All that's left for me to say, firstly, is to say thanks very much for coming along. Certainly, I found presentations very, very interesting, I suppose more importantly, hopefully, you have too, and also that it will have stimulated whether it's further questions or practical actions or greater ideas for your roles back in primarily institutions and elsewhere. It would be helpful if you could spend 60 seconds or so filling out the evaluation form that's inside each of the packs and just hand those in when you leave. And for those of you having to make journeys, well, obviously you've got to all make journeys home, but safe journeys home, but particularly if you're having to face whether it's Exeter or all the way back to Plymouth, apparently it's going to be 5.5 hours. So, good luck. Thanks very much. And
thank you for listening to this podcast from policyreview.tv. For more details, go to www.policyreview.tv. Please note that this audio is subject to copyright and cannot be used by other broadcasters or for commercial gain.